Hello.
Hi, Mr. Carrera. Ms. Gail Rittenhouse is going to be conducting your hearing. So we're getting ready to get started at this time, okay?
Right on.
Good morning, sir. Can you hear me okay?
Mr. Carrera?
Where'd he go?
Mr. Carrera?
He was just there.
Yeah, he was. Maybe they disconnected it.
They gave him an abduction.
Can I hear you?
It disconnected for some reason. We can't hear him anymore.
Hello?
Mr. Carrera, can you hear us?
Yes. I can hear them, but I guess they can't hear me.
We can hear you now, sir. We can hear you.
All right.
Okay. Ms. Rittenhouse is going to be conducting your hearing, sir.
Can you guys hear me now?
Yes, sir.
Yes. Okay, good.
Okay, yeah, they can hear me, Mr. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Okay, Mr. Correa?
Yes.
Could you please state your name and your ABC number for the record?
I'm Correa. ABC number 266-217.
Thank you, sir. You're appearing before the Arizona Board of Executive Clemency for a revocation hearing. And this is concerning the two allegations that are on your warrant of arrest. You signed a form on April 11th that notified you about this hearing. Do you remember that?
Yes, I do.
Okay, good. On that form is a list of your hearing rights. And one of your rights is that you could hire at your expense a licensed attorney to represent you, or you can represent yourself. So did you hire an attorney, or will you represent yourself today, sir?
I'm just here to represent myself, please.
Okay, the attorney's optional anyway. I'd like to introduce you to the members of the board. You can't see us, but we're here. We have the Honorable Lee Quinones, we have the Honorable David Neal, the Honorable Michael Johnson, and my name's Gail Rittenhouse. So I'll be conducting your hearing today. Also with us in the room, we have Mr. Westby, who is a community corrections officer with Department of Corrections. He'll represent the department and your parole officer in today's hearing. We also have with us in the room today your great-grandmother and a friend, and I won't be able to pronounce, is it Constance Correa? And I'm sorry, Tammy, I can't quite read your...
Tension.
Okay. Tension. So will you two be speaking today?
I will.
For the hearing? Okay. So before we get started then, Mr. Correa, I need to swear you, Ms. Tension, and Mr. Westby in. So for the three of you, do you solemnly swear to tell the whole truth and nothing but the truth? So help you God, and do you so affirm? Mr. Correa?
I do.
Ms. Tuchin?
I
and Mr. Wiseman? Thank you. Okay, Mr. Clare, your hearing will be conducted in two phases. So in phase one, we determine if you violated the terms and conditions of supervision. Then in phase two, we determine if that supervision should be reinstated or revoked. So for phase one, I will read each of these allegations to you. And as I read them, I need you to tell me if they're true or false. If you believe it's false, then we'll go to Mr. Westby for testimony from Department of Corrections. And then the board will make the determination as to whether you violated your conditions. Okay, so you ready to start phase one, sir?
Yes, ma'am.
All right, let's start then. And the first allegation is that you were in violation of condition number 7. As demonstrated by your failure to submit a urine specimen for drug testing on or about December 22, 2017, per the task individual testing compliance summary dated December 28, 2017. Mr. Correa, is this true or false?
That's correct, yes.
This is true? Okay.
Yes.
And then the other allegation is that you were in violation of Condition 12A, as demonstrated by your failure to follow the directives of your assigned parole officer, by failing to report on or about December 28, 2017, to South Mountain Parole Office at 801 South 16th Street in Phoenix, for a face-to-face contact visit the next business day after leaving your approved residence at 1409 South Mill Avenue in Tempe on December 27th, 2017, as directed by your Arizona Conditions of Supervision, which were dated September 15th, 2017. At that point, your whereabouts were unknown unless you were an absconder from supervision. Mr. Correa, is this true or false?
True.
It's true. Okay. All right, then based on Mr. Correa's admission, I move to find him delinquent as he violated the terms and conditions of supervision and had lapsed or may have lapsed into criminal ways or company.
Second.
Agreed.
Agreed.
Okay, motion by myself, seconded by Mr. Johnson, agreed by Mr. Neal, Mr. Quinones. Hold 1 second, Mr. Correa. I'm marking paperwork, which I want to do correctly. Okay, thank you.
Okay.
All right, I'm sure you want me to do it correctly, too. Okay, so Mr. Correa, we'll start phase two of your hearing and determine if your supervision should be reinstated or revoked. But before we do that, we're going to ask Mr. Westby to give us all some background information about your case. So just stay on the line. We'll be right back with you. Just on, and then we'll talk some more. We'll ask you some questions. So Mr. Westby?
On September 15th, 2017, Mr. Correa was released from DOC. He was arrested March 8th, 2018 by Phoenix PD for new charges. He was back in DOC custody March 8th, 2018 with an adjusted CCD of November 25th, 2018, which reflects 71 absconding days. Current conviction, 2011, burglary first degree, 7 years. He has no prior convictions. This is his first term in DOC. CUIR score 5.5, mental health score 2, substance abuse score 2. STG gang information notes, he's an admitted member of the Sereno Security Threat Group and also an admitted member of the 18th Street East Los Angeles Criminal Street Gang. Prior term supervisions, there are none. Disciplinary violations are significant with violence, kidnapping, hostage, assault of a staff member, and drugs. Under arrest, 2008, burglary, second degree, Arizona juvenile probation. There were several other property crime arrests that were since then. However, charges were all dismissed on those. His community risk score is a G4V5.
Okay, thank you, sir. So, Mr. Correa, we have just a brief written case supervision summary, and it looks like you were released to go to the address that was mentioned earlier, the 1409 South Mill Avenue in Tempe.
Correct.
So, who lives there?
Excuse me?
Whose residence is that? Who were you going to live with?
Nobody's currently living at the residence right now, but at the time, it was one of the individuals that are present in the room today, which is Tammy Fetching.
Okay.
That was my girlfriend at the time.
Okay. All right. And did you stay, it looks like you left there, that's one of the allegations, you left there on around the end of December, I'm not sure I can get it quickly here. So you left around the end of December?
Correct.
Okay, and where'd you go after that?
I just went to stay with family members that I could, family members that I could stay with at the time, friends and certain individuals that, and I guess anywhere I could stay, I really didn't have a place to stay. I chose to just try to stay wherever and, try to get by on a day-to-day basis.
Okay. And any particular reason you didn't let your parole officer know?
At the time, I was going through a lot of personal issues and, I was going through a lot of things, not only with myself, but already with my parole officer due to UAs and things like that. I just let myself get out of control. And then, I actually talked to him the day that I left. And I just didn't find it within myself to feel like it was necessary to report to him. And I try to do things on my own.
Okay. Were you working at all while you were out?
I did work at two spots. One I worked, I believe, was called Jackson's Car Wash.
Okay.
But I ended up leaving there to work for another place called Zero Water Mass, which was an upcoming company at the time that I ended up getting laid off, which you know, make things a little bit more harder on me. I quit the Jackson's car wash in order to try to have more time at the Zero Water House, but they ended up laying me off there, so, you know, I was employed for not a very long time, but I did work, and I did try.
All right.
To stay employed, but it wasn't easy for me at the time.
Looks like you were responsible to submit some UAs, and there was one in October on the 26th that was positive for marijuana. Then
correct.
It looks like the end of about a month later, there was you failed the line. You were supposed to show up on the 30th, and you were told to go give a sample on the 1st, and that one turned up positive for marijuana and amphetamine, sir. So what was
that? At the time, I was already going down, and I was already, like I said, falling out of my place, and, you know, at that time, I had already planned on going on the run, but, you know, I try to stay in line, and I try to keep, you know, working with my parole officer. You know, I didn't want to go on the run, you know what I mean? That's the reason why I went to go drop on the 1st instead of the 30th is, you know, the next day I called my parole officer and told him, hey, man, check it out, you know, I'm not trying to, you know, I didn't go to task yesterday, you know, this was my plan, but, you know, I'm not trying to do that, and, you know, I tried to see if he was willing to work with me, and he was, and so I ended up going the next day and just testing positive for marijuana and amphetamine.
All right. Okay, it also looks like you were at some point sanctioned to go to CAP programming.
Correct.
And did you ever show up at that?
Yeah, I attended probably like six. I attended every class up until the point that I went on the run. So up until the day that I violated, that I did, got my warrant, I did attend every class up until that point.
Okay, so around the end of, was that around the end of December?
Correct.
Okay. So what were the, I mean, you talk about you were having a lot of issues and that kind of is what helped you make the decision on to stay in touch with your PO. What was going on? What was happening?
Well, honestly, it was just a lot of relationship issues, you know, a lot of relationship things, you know, the financial struggle, the barely in and out and not really, you know, not really having a lot of, I don't want to say resources, but I just didn't, I don't really know a lot of things about it. You know, I got sent to prison at a very young age, so I don't really know a lot of things about the world out there. So the struggle was real for me, and you know, just the financial struggle, the relationship problems, you know, I mean, it just didn't go as I planned when I got out, and you know, I just let it be the best for me. I let it take control over. Or the lifestyle that I wanted to live and ended up falling down the road.
Okay. All right, sir. Had you, we just mentioned a couple of positive UAs. Had you had an ongoing drug problem before you went to prison?
Yeah, I've done drugs a lot throughout my life, but I mean, I smoked marijuana since a young age, but you know, I didn't start really doing methamphetamines until a later age in my life, and then
About when did you start using meth?
Probably like around the age of 18, like right before I came to prison, and then, you know, I got out, and then you know, I tried to stay away from it, but, you know, I ended up falling into the wrong crowd of people again.
Okay. Did you continue using drugs while you were in prison?
I have tested positive for UAs in here, refusals or UAs, but it wasn't amphetamines or marijuana.
What was it in prison?
Opiates.
Okay. And what's your plan with respect to continuing drug use?
Excuse me?
Have you done any sort of drug treatment? Are you interested in stopping using drugs?
I did as a juvenile. I came to a program called the New Leaf, and then the only drug treatment that I did kind of go through was the CAP program, which was This wasn't really drug treatment. My parole officer, the day I went on the run, the day I actually called him and got violated, he was trying to enroll me into some kind of rehab, but, you know, I was so frustrated at the time. He wanted me to turn myself into the rehab that day, and you know, I never gave it the opportunity. I never tried it, so I haven't really had any drug treatment.
Okay. What were you doing the day that the Phoenix PD picked you up? Why did you come to their attention that day?
I was just in the wrong place at the wrong time.
Where?
I was actually at a place where my sister lives at the time, and I guess the cops were called there for some apparent reason, and I was there just at the wrong place at the wrong time.
So some other event happened, and they just checked everybody's ID? Is that what you're saying?
Correct.
Okay. All right, I'm going to see if my fellow board members have any questions for you. Does anyone have a question? All right. Then, Mr. Correa, we'd like to invite your friend to come up and testify, whatever she'd like to tell the board. Is that okay with you, sir?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay. If you'd like to come up. And please, first thing, state your name. You know how it goes after.
Sure. Good morning. My name is Tammy Tejan.
Uh-huh. And what would you like to tell the board?
Well, I would like to say before you, on behalf of my friend, Adam Correa, I've been a friend of the family for at least 13 years, so I know this man very well. I've witnessed him grow up in the circumstances that he was growing up in, and unfortunately, it wasn't very good. As an outsider to that world that he lives in, it was very surprising to me that when I did meet him at the age of 13, that he was undergoing such difficulty and had such a huge responsibility to provide for his family and for himself. So he was merely surviving on the streets, and I remained in contact with him throughout his adolescence because I was drawn into his significant character. He's a very, very bright person, a very loving person, a very caring and giving person. And I heavily believe that he would be something other than this, other than being in prison. Sorry.
It's okay.
So throughout prison, I remained his friend, and I remained in close contact to him, communicating every couple weeks for years. And I agreed to know him, and I agreed to understand him as an individual, as an adult. And I still saw such great character and an exceptional person on the other end of those letters. And it is true, when he got out, he was very level-minded, and he was motivated to live a different lifestyle. But like he said, life, everyday life and stress, he wasn't able to combat that, and he wasn't able to work through it like we all can. And I got the best of him because he, inside, is a winner. And when he's losing, he doesn't know what to do. He doesn't know how to cope with that. And he has challenges in that area. And I noticed and I recognized that. And as much support that we could give him, it just wasn't enough for him to be able to bring himself to continue being good and continue to do good. And I think when all of that got the best of him, he turned to substance abuse. And that was really the first time that I had known him to do anything like that, to be involved in drugs and involved in that lifestyle, because I wasn't around it when he was growing up. I was always on the outside, and I was always just a friend. But I did realize that a lot of stuff was going on in his life. So he did decline. And I think that the reason that I'm here today is to ask for your consideration that he goes to a rehabilitation center, because I really feel that him being incarcerated is not going to help him. It's not going to help him to be a person in this community. After he's out and after he's released and free, I feel like if he deserves a second chance, this is time for preparation for that second chance, and he needs a second chance to be just a regular human being out here in the free world with every opportunity that we are given. And that's all I really want for him, because I see it within him. And I know that he can do it, but he just needs support and he needs guidance. And I feel that putting him in a rehab and allowing him to adjust and get his ground would help him be a significant member of the community. He's a provider for his family. He's needed. He's needed in his family, and he's needed because he's a great person. You know, he's the eldest son of his family. He has two sisters and a brother. And as long as I've known Omar, Adan, he's always cared and provided, tried to provide for his family and me, extremely he needed to do. And unfortunately for him, he had to pay the price, and he had to be in prison for 6 years. This man is 25 years old, and he spent 8 years of his life incarcerated. He's not being spent an entire adult's life out in the free world, and with that known, he lacks civil survival skills. He lacks civil survival skills to be able to be out here and go through the daily things that we have to go through. Finances, relationships, demands, rules, everything. And he really, really, really did try. I took him every single time to his meetings, every single time he needed to drop a UA, everything that he was supposed to do, he tried very, very hard. And I feel that with this second opportunity, if he could please either go to a rehabilitation center, or if while in prison he's able to get some kind of programming or be submitted to a different area where he can prepare himself for a better future for himself, because I feel like he has just been given no chances, real chances, as a human. And I feel very strongly that he will do good.
Okay, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Appreciate it. Board members have any questions?
No.
Okay, thanks so much. All right. So, Mr. Correa, the board, your hearing is just about come to an end, but we wanted to give you an opportunity to make a final statement. Is there anything you've thought of that maybe you didn't tell us earlier that you need us to know?
No, the only thing I would like is to thank my family, the individual that I was with me today in the courtroom, and that's pretty much it, you know. I mean, besides that, you know, I leave everything else in the Lord's hands today, you know, whatever.
Okay, thank you. You definitely have some good supporters here, so. Mr. Correa, the board is going to go into discussion. Oh, I'm sorry. Mr. Johnson has a question.
Ms. Correa, I just wanted to, and maybe I didn't quite understand it, but I thought I heard you say it earlier that you had planned to go on the run, you know, prior to you leaving.
Correct.
Okay.
That was just you know, I got that first dirty UA for the marijuana, and then my second dirty UA, you know, I didn't think that my parole officer was going to give me another opportunity. So I didn't go to task because I knew I was going to test positive for the marijuana and the amphetamines. But I did call him the next day and tell him, hey, you know, you know, I was trying to be there for my girlfriend at the time and the family still, so I ended up calling him and he was willing to work with me and you know, so I ended up going to task and we just kept going down here, so eventually I did end up going on the run.
Okay, thank you, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Johnson. Any last questions? Okay. All right, so Mr. Correa, the board is going to go into discussion. We do all of our discussion in public. We don't talk about cases before we go in this room. So all we ask is that you just stay on the line, remain silent, and we'll be right back with you, sir.
Okay,
so the board is now in discussion. This is certainly a difficult case, as Mr. Correa has just one prison term. On the plus side, he was working when he was out, or at least for a while until he got laid off, and that had to be discouraging. But he has good support from at least two people here that are here for him. And his friend spoke very convincingly on his behalf. I think she's got her head on right about it. He did admit, however, that he, with respect to this drug use, that he kind of got involved with the wrong people again. So it's a good insight on his part to know that that's a problem, but he unfortunately used drugs while he was on supervision. The part that I just can't overlook in this is the 71 days that he absconded. And you know, Mr. Johnson, you even asked about the comments about he thought about going on the run. So he was thinking about it even while I was on supervision. I'm not seeing him as a good candidate for community supervision, but maybe I missed something. Anyone see anything different, Mr. Quinones?
It's basically the same position as Rittenhouse. I'm wondering if he might be better served coming out without community supervision. I don't think it really worked out well for him. And I don't know if we can safely return him in this frame of mind right now.
Right. Okay, thank you, sir. All right, then I'm going to make a motion based on information and more at 2017W4337, our discussion with Mr. Correa, information provided by Mr. Westby of the Department of Corrections. I move to revoke community supervision as Mr. Correa was delinquent, violated the terms and conditions of supervision, and had lapsed or was about to lapse into criminal ways of company, specifically by absconding for 71 days, during which time his parole officer didn't know what he was doing, and also for using marijuana and amphetamines while he was on community supervision.
Second.
Agreed.
All right. So motion by myself, seconded by Mr. Johnson, agreed by Mr. Neal and Mr. Quinones. Okay, back to you, Mr. Correa. You heard the board's discussion, and the board has voted unanimously to revoke your community supervision, sir.
I'm sorry, Ms. The phone cut out for quite a little bit. I'm sorry.
Well, that's all right. Not a problem. You heard the board's discussion, and the board has voted unanimously to revoke your community supervision, sir. You'll be released on or about. I mean, it's close to, depends on what happens between now and then. November 25th, 2018. But at that time, you will not have a parole officer. You will be on your own. You won't have to worry about reporting to somebody. We were pleased to hear you say that you had the insight to realize that when you used the drugs, that you'd gotten in with the wrong people. Because that's always, I don't recall a single instance of someone saying, yeah, I just decided to use them on my own. It's always the influence of the wrong people. So you have that much of an insight about yourself. And we did appreciate that you were working. You do have a good friend to support you, and she's able to support you, but a lot of the success has to come from within you. So we know you can make it, and we all think that you'll do better just remaining where you are, and then when you're released, you won't have a parole officer. You'll be completely through with your sentence and free to do whatever you want, sir. So we thank you so much for participating in your hearing. We thank you for your supporters today, and this is going to conclude your hearing at this time, sir.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, sir. And if you give the phone back to the CO3, we'd appreciate it. Thank you.